Hi, I'm Siobhan Sarna. I'm so pleased to have you here today, along with Jenny Olson. A little bit about me, in case you're new. I have just wrapped up the new Science and Wisdom of Menopause Summit. Tens of thousands of women and people came. Thank you so much if you were part of that. And we also, I have a platform called SIBO SOS, which deals with IBS and SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. I wrote a book called Healing SIBO, and I've done actually 10 other additional online summits, ranging everything from lymph to fascia to liver and gallbladder health to biological dentistry. Everything that I had bugging me that wasn't being addressed in mainstream doctor's appointments. But I found all these people who knew how to help. And then I was like, okay, thank you. And now I'm getting you out to the rest of the world. So I use my TV experience to do all of that. It's been going great. So glad you're here because it really would be like I could be shouting from the mountaintop and no one could hear me, but you're hearing me, and so I appreciate it. My very special guest today, can you come on camera there, Jenny? Because I'd love to have everybody see your
I
face.
will try.
Okay, you had a
It's
little bit of weird tech stuff with the presentation, so bear with us if you see a weird black thing covering the screen at some point. We'll do our best.
you still can't see. I can see you guys, but you can't see me, can you?
I can see you. I can see you. I can see it. Yep. And then I do see a couple of weird black things on the slide, but it will not, I think, inhibit the presentation. Yeah, weird black boxes. It almost looks like they wanted you to put like an image in there, like a Canva, when you can drop and drag into an image. It doesn't matter. We're all going to get the job done here and learning about how to address overgrowth of yeast in mainly the vaginal microbiome. And Jenny Olson is my special guest. She is a nationally board certified holistic nutritionist with 12 years of experience working in the wellness industry, both public health educator and nutritional therapist. She received her Bachelor of Arts in International Relations, nice, from the University of Northern Colorado in 2007. And she wanted to join the Foreign Service, but life happens, and she went on to get her master's in nutrition therapy from Nutrition Therapy Institute of Denver. She works with clients one-on-one, and she also is a clinical science liaison for Microbiome Labs. And we're very glad to have her here talking about this. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Do this. And like Siobhan said, just some image and tech issues on this end, but hopefully you guys can see what you need to see, even though I'm not seeing what I need to see.
Won't
It's
even
okay.
say that anymore
We're
because I
gonna make
know
it work.
yesterday. Let's just keep going.
All right, I'm gonna minimize this and see if that will help. Just with the whole image. So like Siobhan said, today we are going to be kind of doing a little bit of a deep dive on Candida specifically, and then looking at, some different solutions and probiotic-based, nutraceutical-based approaches that we can do about that. And again, I'm assuming you see the next slide, so I'm going to keep rolling here. So
You're good.
what we're going to do,
You're
we're
good.
good, Siobhan? Okay, awesome. We're kind of going to profile Candida and look at, some of these nitty-gritty mechanisms of action and look at some of our risk factors for specifically the female microbiome and vulvovaginal Candida overgrowth. So this is candidiasis, and looking at that, how the vagina-gut hormone axis, how that plays a role in all of this, and of course, looking at some of our new probiotic research and how that pertains. So Candida overgrowth today, really, if we look at even especially over the last 5 years, it was once thought, that this fungal infection is becoming more of a challenging issue. And it is thought that this is an underreported issue. And now they're thinking that the estimates of, fungal disease could be even 5 times greater than it was once reported. Now, Really, what we're talking about here, over 90% of these fungal infections are caused by just a few select species of Candida, primarily Candida albicans, but we also have Glabrata, Oris, Crusi, and some of those. And of all of those species, albicans really is going to be our most problematic and most causative agent of, what we call mucosal or systemic infections. So it's responsible for about 70% of those infections worldwide. And if you have been listening to us, or if you know about some of this lately, I know Alicia spoke to you guys a little while ago, vulvovaginal candidiasis, so this is vaginal yeast infections, those are affecting 75% of women in childbearing age. So this is women who are experiencing this at least once in their life. And we know that a good percentage of those women are experiencing this recurrently. So they're having, more than three episodes per year. So this is recurrent vulvovaginal candidiasis. And what's really important and really a good take home to bring home today is that the gut microbiome is really recognized, surprise, surprise, as our this primary infection reservoir. So this is really going to be our main primary target for a lot of our interventions, specifically for these candidal infections. So again, we are for the scope of our time together today, we're going to be focusing and drilling in on Candida albicans, as it is the most it's the most common. Now, this is commensal, so it means it can exist and it can be benign. In fact, it can even serve some beneficial functions. It's going to aid in nutrient digestion when it is in that sort of commensal benign form. And Candida albicans are found, it can colonize in many different microbial niches. So this could be oral, nasal, it could be on the skin, in the gut, in the vagina. And what we know is that they have an interdependent relationship. So like a lot of our commensals, there's this interdependent relationship between Candida and other bacteria. So when those conditions are altered or disrupted, primarily, sometimes during antibiotic use, this can shift Candida and make it more opportunistic. So Candida has a very opportunistic nature. And this can cause it to go from colonization to invasion, which we're going to talk about. And this can lead to different types of infections, things that may affect the mucosal surfaces. So that's primarily what we're going to talk about today. But if those go untreated or mistreated for a long period of time, they can become systemic. So this is candidemia. This is when it can breach those barriers and enter the bloodstream. So what kinds of symptoms can this cause? We know that Candida, many of us are familiar with this. This can cause things like gas, bloating, as it really is going to start residing in the gut first. We may experience bowel irregularity, even upper digestion symptoms, digestive insufficiency, food intolerance. And then, of course, our telltale symptoms, things like sugar cravings, brain fog, metabolic dysfunction, and of course, vaginal discomfort. Now, a lot of these symptoms, of course, they have so much crossover with other more serious health conditions. And this can make Candida a little hard to pin down and diagnose, but there are a few symptoms that do stand out as being more distinctive for Candida. This is things like sugar cravings. More recent research has also revealed that fatigue is more highly associated with Candida infections. So a lot of these things we want to be on the lookout for. Now, as we're talking about Candida, we kind of ask ourselves, what makes Candida albicans really so special? And this is, if I were to imagine Candida albicans having sort of a truncated resume, this is maybe what I would imagine it looks like. And so it's going to boast as being the most successful of all the fungi, always seeking out opportunities to expand. It's very dynamic, it's adaptable, it's flexible to a variety of environments, and a high potential for growth. So you can imagine, that's what a hiring manager may want to hear. career. And it has all those attributes. And one of the reasons why is because it's able to take on what's called different morphological forms. So you can see it can go from a yeast cell to what's called a pseudohyphae and true hyphae forms. So it can go through all these different forms, which makes it very adaptable and flexible. It can adapt to different temperatures. It has the ability to adhere to the epithelial cells and also invade. It's going to acquire a lot of nutrients. It can also evade the immune system and create, drug resistance. How does it do this? So Candida has these special, what are called virulence factors. So it can produce protease enzymes like candelicin, secreted aspartyl protease. These are very toxic. And they are adhesion molecules as well. So they can cause that adhesion. And they can also start creating that biofilm around themselves. So that's, a little bit of profiling and some of the mechanisms behind Candida. It is just very flexible. So if we're talking about how Candida goes from colonization to invasion, of course, we oftentimes will depict, on the left side here, we have a healthy state. This is a healthy state where the yeast cells are balanced by other bacteria. There's not a lot of inflammation going on. They're not eliciting that epithelial damage, or there's no excessive immune response. Then we have a triggering event. So this is, this could be antibiotics, this could be our diet, this could be a number of things that allows for this proliferation, and this is going to activate the Candida to go from yeast to hyphal form. And then what happens there is that it's going to start secreting all of those virulence factors that allow it to infect and invade. So it's going to damage and penetrate the intestinal epithelium. And this is really going to alert the immune system. It's going to activate all these other inflammatory cascades. These are specific things, the inflammasome, which is very critical specifically for the vaginal epithelial cells. We're going to see immune dysregulation. And not to mention, it also is going to disrupt our glucose signaling through its acetaldehyde production. And that's something that many of us may be familiar with, is that symptom of brain fog, or in a very extreme sense, that Ottawa brewery syndrome. And if this really goes undetected, or we're failing to reduce or resolve this is what can lead to more systemic infections, and we're going to start to get some of those symptoms that we associate with Candida. Now, we want to step back and ask ourselves, we catch that. What triggers that Candida to go from friend to foe, or from colonization to invasion? And it's a number of things, right? Some of the first things that we might think about are things like poor nutrition, a diet that's high in sugar or high in carbohydrates, certainly alcohol, anything that's going to disrupt the microbiome. This could be antibiotic use, this could be toxins, any form of dysbiosis will provide an opportunity for the infection to take place. And so those antibiotics specifically are wiping out lactobacillus species first. And you'll see how this really affects the vaginal microbiome. If we have intestinal permeability already, this is going to create an environment and a surface layer that's really easy for Candida to penetrate. Medications, PPI use, something we may all be familiar with SIBO, but also very highly prevalent, and leaves us vulnerable to fungal infections. Anything that suppresses our immune function, our ability to fight off this infection. So this could be just simply chronic stress, or things like corticosteroids, metabolic disease like diabetes. If we're repeatedly using the same antifungal, so we can create this antifungal resistance to things like fluconazole. And then, of course, hormonal fluctuations, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Okay, So, how does this, if we're taking all of that information about Candida, we're profiling it, we have to understand some of the mechanisms, let's look at the specifically the female microbiome and risk factors for vulvovaginal candidiasis. A lot of these are going to be very, very similar. And we're looking at, what is going on with the host, that's us, what's And this is the nature of the candida itself, but also the environment. So that's really what we're going to double click on today is looking at that environment. What's going on in the environment of the vaginal microbiome? Also, what's happening with our hormones and what's happening with the gut dysbiosis. So, to just sort of step back and lay a foundation, let's talk about what really constitutes an optimal vaginal microbiome first off? First, of course, we want it to be abundant and dominated by Lactobacillus species. These have special characteristics. They're able to produce bacteriocins, lactic acid, hydrogen peroxide. All of these things are going to help protect the vaginal microbiome from pathogen invasion. We want the vaginal microbiome to be low in diversity. So unlike our gut, which is very high in diversity, the vaginal microbiome is very low. So just different ecology. The pH is also different as well. We have a higher pH, more acidic, more protective. And specifically, these are special Lactobacillus species. So it's not just any Lactobacillus species we want down there. There are things like Crispetus, Lactobacillus gasseri, Lactobacillus jensenii, as well as Lactobacillus einers, which is a little bit more of a wild card. So we'll talk about that. And you may have seen more information out there, especially right now, about what are called community state types. So this is a way that we can look at the vaginal microbiome and classify and start to categorize it to help us identify where the dysbiosis is taking place. So we have state 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. State one, so this is community state type one, will be dominated by Lactobacillus crispetus. This is by far considered the healthiest community state type because it's associated with low pH. It's resistant to dysbiosis because it produces a special lactic acid called D-lactic acid. It is considered the most stable throughout the menstrual cycle, so throughout hormonal fluctuations, throughout pH fluctuations. And then we have state two, state type two, which is dominated by Lactobacillus gasseri. This is also considered healthy. It's rarely associated with disease. Then we have that wild card, which is state type three. And this is one which could be good, could be bad. It's a little bit of a transitionary state type, and it can transition easily into bacterial vaginosis associated state type. It is also the one that is more recent research in the last few years has shown that state type three is more closely associated with and likely to harbor candida. So we see higher incidences of vulvovaginal candidiasis with state type three. Now, state type four is our least healthy state type. So, this is not dominated by Lactobacillus species, high diversity, most highly associated with some of our unfavorable and vaginal dysbiotic states, even as far as in more serious things like miscarriage and pregnancy outcomes. And state type five is also a healthy one. So, that's Lactobacillus jensenii. So what we're aiming for here when we are testing this, which we can do through the vaginal health kit, we want to aim for state type one, two, and five. So while it's good to know all of this, we also want to know what is influencing and what's influencing these state types. We're certainly not born with a community state type. These can shift and fluctuate even within 2 months. So how is it influenced? And one of the primary ways that this is influenced is through the gut-vagina axis. This is also, why things like oral probiotics and diet, we know that they can improve our gut microbiome, but it's also the mechanism by which they can also improve vaginal dysbiosis. So The reason why is because it is there's a just simply a close proximity to these openings between the vagina and the anus. And this is going to lead to a higher amount of that direct bacterial translocation between the stool and between the vagina. And you can see this is evidenced with higher incidence of IBS are correlated with higher rates of vulvovaginal candidiasis and BV. When candida is detected in the stool, it's also detected in the vagina. Same thing with BV-associated bacteria. And alternatively, so it's the other direction. If we have a higher concentration of our beneficial lactobacillus species in the stool, we're more likely to have a healthier vaginal microbial composition. So in this, gut health is conferring vaginal health. And so that's one of our main routes of influence for these community state types. This is evidence. So we see more evidence between intestinal candida increasing the risk for vulvovaginal candidiasis. This research was done back in the 1970s. They identified this, but a more recent study looked at the commonality between intestinal candida and vaginal yeast infection, and they found that 33% of patients with vaginal yeast infections were infected in both the intestine and the vagina. 92% of those shared really high same genome sequencing. And the recurrence rate, what was interesting in this study is the recurrence rate was higher when there was infection in both the intestine and the vagina. So remember, we talked about VVC recurrent rate. And so that's really, that's how we develop antifungal resistance. And so this is another reason why we address the gut often so we can change the vaginal microbiome. Now, let's talk a little bit about estrogen's influence. Estrogen, first of all, can help build and improve glycogen content in the vaginal microbiome. The reason why this is important is that glycogen is a substrate, it's a food for the lactobacillus species, but it's also a food for candida. So we can sometimes be dealing with both. Estrogen, higher amounts of estrogen dominance has been shown to affect the colonization of candida, also potentially increasing the adhesion and downregulating the immune response to candida, also promoting potentially morphological transition between the yeast and the hyphae form. So we just in thinking about that, we just want to think about times where maybe we're more vulnerable to yeast infection. So this could be as we're entering puberty, seeing that uptick in estrogen. And if the microbiome has candida, then we might see a higher rate of yeast infections during that time, during pregnancy, even if someone is starting hormone replacement therapy or contraception, these might be times where we might see a higher risk for vaginal yeast infections. In postmenopause, there's a lower susceptibility to specifically yeast infections because of that lower estrogen. Again, the caveat here is if we are on hormone replacement therapy. I want to be clear though, when we're talking about this is not in the research. The authors in the research here also are very clear to say that it's estrogen isn't driving or causing these candida infections. It's really we're talking about a pre-existing situation of dysbiosis. And so we want to be thinking about it's not to say that we don't want to use HRT or oral contraception. These are things that are very valuable and can be life-changing. However, what we may want to consider is let's clear candida and heal the gut prior to maybe starting some of these things. So some other considerations here and places where you may be looking and want to be on the lookout for candida overgrowth. Is during preconception planning, postpartum can be also a time where there's a lot of dysbiosis and high risk for yeast infection. Again, when we see that community state type 3 or 4, when we're seeing that dysbiosis, gut dysbiosis, or those seasons of high stress, and during pre and perimenopause, so not postmenopause, but this can be also a season of very intense fluctuations of estrogen. So there may be higher risk of vaginal yeast infections here. All right, so that being said, what we want to look for when we're thinking about these solutions, we want a restorative and competitive probiotic that is going to not allow candida to overgrow. We need natural antifungals that are not as prone to resistance. We also want biofilm support, and we also need gut barrier integrity and resilience. So we want to build up that gut barrier so it doesn't allow for that invasion. And we also want toxin binding and clearance. So this is kind of the things that we're looking for when we're building an effective candida protocol. Now, the first one, of course, is probiotics. And the first blend that I want to talk about here is Astarte. Astarte is a blend of probiotics. It's Crispatus, Lactobacillus jensenii, Lactobacillus gasseri, Lactobacillus rhamnosus. And you may have heard of this blend before. And this is a really important one when it comes to the vaginal microbiome. It is resistant to stomach acid and bile salts. It's going to survive digestion. It's able to consume that glycogen. And it's been studied in multiple different settings, but we're just going to focus on a couple today, specifically for Candida. This first one, this is actually done with pregnant women. This is rare, as it's hard to study pregnant women. It's not as safe, but probiotics really have a high safety profile. So this was an open randomized control study. It looked at 60 pregnant women with the herpes virus. Again, the study was just looking at that. This was a dysbiotic model, and then 50 pregnant healthy women. So some of the women received the Astarte blend, and some of the women did not have an intervention at all. And what they were looking at was the presence of Candida, as well as some of those uncomfortable symptoms that come with Candida infection of vaginal discomfort. And they were also looking at some other pregnancy outcomes, other pathogens, and they also saw some results there as well. So first, what we saw in the Astarte group, the probiotic group, was a 50% decrease of Candida, and also a 66% decrease in vaginal discomfort symptoms. So this would be itching. They also saw a 200% increase of Lactobacillus colonization, an improvement in pH, improvement in hydrogen peroxide, which is highly antifungal, and again, an improvement in the vaginal itching. But they also looked at other pathogens like Klebsiella, Enterobacter, and they saw a decrease in those pathogens. And since these were pregnant subjects, they saw a 50% decrease in placental insufficiency and preeclampsia. So, very safe and very good for when we're trying to support this during pregnancy. The next probiotic is LA5. This is a specific type of Lactobacillus acidophilus. And this was a crossover study. It was 6 months long. It was with women who had recurring yeast overgrowth. And really, they were just testing the Lactobacillus acidophilus. And, so women took the placebo or the LA5 for 6 months, and they were measuring the overgrowth or the infection recurrence. So, a pretty long study that should have taken, it takes a whole year to do. And what they found is that the Lactobacillus acidophilus group saw an 85% decrease in infection recurrence and a 74% decrease in overgrowth. Now, a fun fact with this study is that the original study population was actually larger, but 40% of the women who were first in the probiotic group refused to enter the crossover placebo group because they were having such an improvement in their symptoms. So, just a fun part of that study that is easy to miss, but it just speaks to some of the immediate relief that these women were getting. And then in this one, they were looking at LA5 directly and comparing it to fluconazole. So these are also with women with positive candida cultures, and some of them took the a probiotic placebo plus fluconazole. Some of them took the LA5 plus a placebo fluconazole. And they were measuring all of the symptoms and markers that come with candida overgrowth, things like dysuria, burning, discharge, and itching. And so, what they found in this study was that the results were very similar to the fluconazole group, really showing that this simple probiotic stacked up really well against fluconazole, showing this decrease across board of all of these symptoms. So, these were similar results to the fluconazole group. So, just turning a little bit from our lactobacillus friends, we can look at our bacillus friends, our spores. And we know that in this combination study of Bacillus subtilis HE58 and SC208, in this study, you can see that there's an improvement in the epithelial barrier function, and we're lowering a lot of that inflammatory load, which is really, really important when it comes to candida.
Hey, Jenny, can I just ask you a question? So the
Please.
Bacillus subtilis HU58 and the Bacillus coagulans SC208,
208.
those are those the strains in Megaspore?
Those are the strains in Megaspore. They're also the strains in Restore Flora.
Okay, I just wanted to like throw that in there for those of you already using Microbiome Labs products, or if you're like okay, spores, what? So the just
Yes, I did turn a little bit
put a pin
to.
in that just in your brains for a second. And also, I did throw the coupon information for those of you who wanted to go ahead and order from Microbiome Labs with the 15% off. Just go and like peruse the link and stuff. Back to you, Jenny, in the studio. Just wanted to get in that quote for the sport.
I appreciate the clarification. All of the things I'm discussing today are ingredients in our Microbiome Labs products, including the Saccharomyces boulardii. So, as we know, this can be an integral part of a Candida protocol. It is a commensal yeast. It's known to compete with Candida albicans. It can secrete capric acid, which can reduce a lot of those virulence factors that we just talked about. Saccharomyces boulardii has been studied for many, many different things across board. So it's also going to have that antimicrobial, antitoxin activity. It is also important for producing normal levels of short chain fatty acids. So been very well studied in post-antibiotic conditions where we see high candida. And again, those last two, the Saccharomyces boulardii, the HU58, and the SC208 are in the Restore Flora. So moving on to nutraceuticals. Really, the reason why we're talking about this is, remember, we're trying to hit all of those boxes that we just talked about. You know, we want a restoration of the epithelial lining, but we also need natural antifungals, and we also need to address biofilms. So the undecylinic acid is a really important one. It's kind of fun to say as well. So undecylinic acid, and this is one that has been shown to inhibit biofilm formation of the candida. So it really allows it to be seen by the immune system, and this is a really important part of a candida protocol. Of many, you know, antimicrobial, antiparasitic type protocols. So once that biofilm is broken down, we can, the immune system can respond to it. And this is shown in studies. This was a study where the yeast cells were incubated with the undecylinic acid, for 3 hours. And you can see that drop within that first 20 minutes. And they saw that germ formation is just dropping. So it really reduces the virulence and the infective nature of Candida. And the next one is one that we don't often really think about with Candida, and that's bee propolis. But bee propolis, if it's considered sort of bee glue, it's part of that production. It has, you know, plant resin, it has wax, essential oils in it, has pollen, and it's pleiotropic, as you can see. Bee propolis is used for so many different things. It's antiviral. We use it in oral care, but specifically, it's antifungal, antidiabetic, and antibacterial. And it has been studied against Candida species. There's specific properties in bee propolis that are able to break down the fungal cell walls. Also been shown to be effective against fluconazole-resistant strains, which is really important. So what happens when we start taking the undecylic acid, the bee propolis, we're starting to take these spores and the lactobacillus species, it really may create what are called Herxheimer symptoms. So a lot of us I know are familiar. This is die-off. It's very uncomfortable. Most of us have walked through this before. It's often similar symptoms that the infection caused itself. And a lot of times what we're doing with that, maybe we're going to start low and slow with some of these supplements. Maybe we're going to start to encourage lymphatic drainage, right? We're going to do some massage. We're going to take a bath. We're going to manage those cortisol levels. We're going to take care of our sleep, right? But we also want to make sure that we are binding a lot of what's being released from those biofilms. So those fragments, so things like lipopolysaccharide and anything else that the candida could be hiding, which those biofilms can actually hide several things. And so this is that immune and clearance and binding support that we see from serum bovine immunoglobulins. And this is what we see in mega IgG. And we know that this is going to help reduce gut permeability and improve that intestinal absorption. So it's going to improve the mucosal layer. But another aspect of mega IgG is that it binds. So it binds to lipopolysaccharide primarily, but it's also going to bind to Candida albicans. It can bind to H. pylori, which can often hide in the biofilms. It can bind to Klebsiella. It can bind to aflatoxin. So some of these can be sort of highly prevalent with a Candida infection. So that is sort of, what's going to complete that protocol is we need that binder. So putting it all together, here we go. So this is, all of the ingredients that we just talked about go into these products, and it's going to check off all of these boxes. So we have the vaginal balance, which has that Astarte blend, the LA5, Mega Mycobalance, which features the undecylinic and the bee propolis. Of course, we have our Mega IgG, and then the Restore Flora, which is going to feature the HU58, the SC208, and 109. So the Restore Flora PD has all three of those, plus the Saccharomyces boulardii. So this is really going to build us a complete protocol. And how do we walk through that? We're going to be taking two capsules of that vaginal balance per day. The Mega Mycobalance, we titrate. So that first week, and I've done this before where I start off with one soft gel per day. And then that week two, so that we're not exacerbating die-off too much, we're going to start increasing that soft gel every few days until we reach, two soft gels 2 or 3 times per day. And then we're also taking that Mega IgG. And then we can add the Restore Flora. So that's not, we don't have to, but I always like to, especially for that Saccharomyces boulardii. And that's going to feature the Saccharomyces boulardii and those spores that have been studied. So that's kind of how you put that together. Now, if we're wanting to create long-term resilience and prevention, we want to follow this up by something like the Total Gut Restore. We can continue taking the vaginal balance, no problem, but the Total Gut Restore is a good one to follow this up with, to make sure that, we're not having recurrent yeast infections. And I think I'm good on time here, but so this is my last slide here. And so really, hopefully you guys understand, when we are treating, especially a vaginal yeast infection, we really do want to be thinking about the whole person. We want to be thinking about both vaginal and gut interventions, which is going to involve oral probiotics. And a vaginal yeast infection can be driven by so many different risk factors, specifically things like gut dysbiosis, our immune and our hormone status. And then we can successfully intervene with things like probiotics and some of those biofilm busters, the IgG, and those natural antifungals. And then finally, let's see. Oh, that's all I have for you guys.
Okay, and we're running out of time. So
Yep,
I'm talking
I
to you.
figured. Yep.
Perfect. That was fantastic, Jenny. Let's put some love into the chat for Jenny. Thank you. And David, we knew about the black square rectangle on the lower right. We talked about it a little bit before you must have come on, and we can't figure it out. So we're not worrying about it. But yes, thank you. Wasn't that interesting? And kind of disturbing about how virulent and resilient Candida is, but also hopeful because there are answers and those studies were really, really profound. Go ahead and drop that slide. Let's see your beautiful face full screen.
Yes, ma'am. One second. Let me
Thank
stop
you,
sharing
Jenny.
here.
That was great. That was really, really great. Fantastic. And
Great. Yeah, it's such a robust topic that has such a wide scope. And so we can focus in on some of those, targeted interventions.
we have a lot of questions and we have 18 minutes because I know everybody has other things to do and we like to keep a tight ship here. I did want to mention that Microbiome Labs has done a special thing for my community and I love them for it. Not only sharing Jenny with us, but also thank you for that. Here's the coupon for 15% off everything on the site. Couple of things. If you ordered the stool test or if you ordered the vaginal microbiome test, it does not include a consultation. I repeat, it does not include a consultation, but you could take that data and take it to your provider that you would find, and they could possibly help you. And also, maybe that saves some time. Like sometimes you go to a provider, you get the test kit, then you have to go do the test, get the results, come back. But what if you walked in with some results? Okay, that's just one idea that I have for you. But also the formulations that she was just talking about are 15% off, as are those tests to be determined and interpreted by your own providers. And we also have a cool bonus for you. If you do order, but between now and 7 p.m. Eastern, you can email your proof of purchase from today. If you could do it today, we'd really appreciate it, to info@sibosos.com for proof of purchase. And proof of purchase, if you're watching this, I usually turn the camera off at this point. So if you're watching this on the replay, this is only for the people that showed up live. And I really appreciate you watching the replay. So thank you very much. We see you. But this is just for today. You would send it to info@sibosos by send it by midnight tonight, the proof of purchase, but make your purchase by 7 p.m. Eastern time. Okay. This is what you would get. The slides that she just showed us, probably without the black bar on it.
There's bonus slides in there too. So they'll have a bunch of bonus slides if they want.
Very, very cool. And then also, I have a master class. I need to pull it up by my friend. Oh my gosh, this is such a good one. I have to find it. It is by Bree Weisselman. Does anyone here know Bree? Bree is a freaking genius also, and I have to go find it. And she has done a Candida masterclass for my SIBO SOS community. And normally people are buying it all the time for $59. It's an hour followed by a 2-hour recorded Q&A. And it was remarkable. And it's not letting me find that thing right now. And so I don't want to take any more time out of the questions. But anyway, so you, if you send us the proof of purchase by tonight at midnight and you place your order by 7 p.m. Eastern time tonight, you would get Bree Weisselman's $59 masterclass on Candida. Hello, another brilliant mind to add to your information and transformation. And then also the slides from today. Okay, you ready? I can tell right now we're going to do first come first serve on these questions because I can tell we just like exploded with questions. Okay, there's a midwife herbalist I follow online who recommends douching and sitz baths for women's health issues. Could you share your take on these? When they're safe, when they're not, when they could somehow increase the risk of yeast overgrowth and other issues, if not right away. Okay, what do you think, Jenny?
So certainly I wouldn't put them in the same category, sitz bath versus douching. Sitz bath can definitely be very anti-inflammatory and soothing. So I think, if we have a lot of those symptoms that are presenting, and maybe it's both bacterial vaginosis and candida, where we might see swelling and irritation, the sitz bath can certainly be, I think, beneficial. Douching, we've talked about that a little bit on some of, especially this year. It tends to be, even in the research, a little bit more disruptive for the vaginal microbiome. In maybe very severe cases, it could be beneficial, but there's not a lot of control. Whenever we have something from the outside coming in, you always want to think about how much we can, how much are we controlling that substance, and we really want to be careful. The vaginal microbiome is very, it's robust and resilient, but it really does require a delicate balance. So I think the frequency of the douching really is going to matter, and very, very sparingly.
pH of the water, if you use water, there's so many factors. We do need to go really quickly, Jenny. I'm sorry, I don't mean to rush you. So these are going to be like fast and
Yep,
furious.
you got it.
Okay, how do we know how much natural sugars from energy bars, fruit, et cetera, how much a day would surpass the threshold likely to result in yeast?
Symptoms.
Okay, that's a good answer. Yeah, just good answer. There are differences. Are there differences in total benefit or damages to vaginal microbiome if using a little topically versus consuming orally? And also, can we use the formulation for the vagina as a suppository?
Okay, so two-part question. The last part, we do get quite a bit, although there's nothing unsafe in those ingredients. There's nothing that would be unsafe. The studies that have been done on those probiotic strains were all oral probiotic studies. So all of the subjects took them orally, and we still saw those benefits. Of course, this is an oral probiotic. We recommend it orally. What you choose to do on your own is definitely, your prerogative. Again, it is very safe, very benign. The first part of that question, remind me.
Darling, I lost it
Okay.
already. I lost it. Long-term use of, I mean, literally, I have so many questions. Long-term use of antibiotics for chronic Lyme disease, especially when IV is used to introduce antibiotics systemically. What probiotic combinations things can be done to prevent yeast imbalances? Do we have to megadose certain probiotics to fight the good fight against the antibiotics killing off the good microbiomes of the gut, vagina, and other places?
Yeah, I really appreciate this question a lot. I've definitely witnessed this before. For females, obviously the vaginal balance can be taken long term, no problem, to help maintain the lactobacillus species. And then megaspore, also long term, should be used alongside that. And periodically, I would say cycling in the Restore Flora. So getting that Saccharomyces boulardii, maybe not long term, but maybe one every other month or something. So those would be the three, to keep it simple, that I would deal with.
In Ayurveda, they recommend applying oils, castor, sesame, coconut, olive, etc. I know you're not an oil expert, but would you happen to know whether consuming these oils raw or applying them locally could help the vaginal microbiome back into balance?
So we've actually gotten this question a bit with different types of oils. My colleague Maureen, she cites some really good research on olive oil being the mo maybe most benign and safe to kind of look at. So I would, of those, and of my knowledge base, which is not vast with that, you're sticking with maybe olive oil, like versus coconut oil, which is a little bit more acidic and antimicrobial. So olive oil seems to be kind of coming out on top there.
Okay. Someone's asking about how to get the stool testing that you would have your own practitioner interpret. And that is what's it called? Microbiome. Oh, I'm confusing all these
So
words.
the biome effects stool and vaginal
BioEffect. Thank
delicate,
you.
biome
That's the one.
effects.
BioFX. So it's bio and then it's FX, like.
So biome, so BIOME, and
Thank you.
then FX. And those are from providers only. So like, Siobhan, you were mentioning before, go to your provider, have them order the test, and your provider can actually, they're going to be consulting with us on your test. And we now have a vaginal health kit as well. So if you go to your provider, you say, hey, look into this, and you can see some of these patterns. You can find out your community state type, and your provider actually gets the consultation with us.
Very good. Can you talk about why certain BV yeast and common issues we experience as women don't respond well to usual natural recommendations or to conventional treatments for that matter?
So, probably a multi question that we do address. And some, I would first say that first line treatment for both of those is still antibiotics and antifungals. Oftentimes, the relapse rate for BV is between 50 and 80%. And you know, this is largely due, some of these strains are just resistant. Oftentimes, when women are taking these antibiotics, it creates a vulnerability to yeast infection. So they know up to 50% of these women are also concurrently prescribed fluconazole. So here you go, here's your metronidazole. You might as well just take the fluconazole. So it's this cycle and this merry-go-round, or a vicious cycle that women can get on. So when you are adding probiotics to that, so you could even just add probiotics to a conventional treatment and it improves their efficacy. And it may stop that recurrent cycle. And of course, you want to take into account all of those other risk factors we talked about, things like gut dysbiosis, things like stress and hormones as well.
Were these percent changed by these probiotics within a certain period of days, weeks, and months, and sample size for each of these studies? That's like,
So,
go ahead.
yeah, the Astarte study was just that was actually I think just 1 or 2 weeks, and that the study size there it was 60 pregnant women, and then 50 control in the control group, and then in the Lactobacillus acidophilus study that we talked about, the crossover study was 6 months. So each arm was 6 months. So it was a year-long study. And this was the size, remember, was it was larger. So the I think the end size was about 20 or 25, but they started out with more women. And then the other one, I think that was those are the ones that we were talking about.
Okay. Let's see here. Can this probiotic help with something like LS? I can never pronounce this, lichen sclerosis, which they say they don't know what the cause is, but it's got something to do with microbial yeast related that triggers it.
Yeah, so not direct exact research on lichen sclerosis. And definitely, I know that we want to make sure that we're also looking at other factors, pelvic floor therapy, those types of things, pelvic inflammatory disease, and looking at hormone factors. But there is some emerging research with some of these Lactobacillus species. Again, nothing final yet. And it would be more, it's not directly correlated, but if we can see inflammation is brought down with the Lactobacillus species and you're improving immunoregulation in the area. So, yeah, we haven't seen anything direct yet, but I think it is coming.
Luhu is saying it's a big pivot for microbiome labs because we've always heard, Kieran, that lactobacillus and other probiotics that are not spore-based do not survive the digestive tract. They must have figured out a way to do it because these are very strain specific and the studies show that they do work. So I think advanced pivots in technology have happened, Luhu. So
Also sourcing, these are human-derived Lactobacillus species. The Astarte strains were from healthy pregnant women. The Lactobacillus acidophilus is human-derived versus dairy-derived. They're going to have different properties that are more resistant to digestion.
Lou has antibiotics to sac Boulardii, so for now I can't take it. Any suggestions? Hope to reduce the antibodies.
Can you repeat that? They can't take Saccharomyces
Yeah,
boulardii?
because they have antibodies to it.
Oh, I mean, then I would really focus on the spores. So things like Megaspore. You could even highlight HE58 and then focus on the vaginal balance as well, the Lactobacillus species. And Megamycobalance, balance, of course, and IgG.
Can you explain why a woman would be having lots of air bubbles from the vagina in menopause? This is a bubble sensation. No sound, no odor, seems totally related to digestive tract when full after food, particularly veggies. It sounds like gas, right? But not always after food. Well, so you've got a lot of fiber going there with the veggies. Doctors have considered a tiny fistula, but pH seems off, so it could be related to bacterial fungal imbalance. Also, just before we go to you, Jenny, just remember that your body is a big plump, tubes within tubes. And so after you eat, you may be just releasing some gas, and the gas is all over your body, not just in your gut. What do you think, Jenny?
I would agree. I will admit I don't know a lot specifically about that symptom, but I would be going a little bit more upstream and doing a little bit more investigation, either through a biome effects stool test, supporting upper digestion. So yeah, outside of that, I'm not as familiar.
Would this protocol work for candidiasis not only in the vagina but systemically?
Yes.
Very great. Okay. Is the probiotic taken at the exact same time as the antibiotics, or is that self-defeating, losing the value of what we're paying for with the probiotics, the antibiotics canceling those benefits?
Yeah, I would space them apart 2 hours, but they can be taken while you are taking antibiotics. So they can be taken alongside, but still space them in the day about 2 hours.
If we are immunodeficient, getting sick all the time, I'm so sorry. Is it likely that the general immune state increases the probability of vulvovaginal candida, candida?
Candidiasis,
Yeah, or not necessarily?
yes. So low and weak immune function is huge. It is a big driver for vaginal yeast infection. So when the diet's not explaining it, when maybe hormones are not explaining it, we want to look at overall immune function. That's going to be really important for making sure to fight off candida invasion at the vaginal tissue.
And she was talking about that with the IgG and the megaspore, helping the immune system. Debbie, my mom had tons, okay, I think, of vaginal yeast infections. She's 80 and does not get them as often. Wondering if it has something to do with my possible yeast infection. It's interesting, right? Did this stuff help? Does this stuff help with oral yeast? My tongue is white or has white on it. My dentist said it was yeast. It's not always yeast, just for the record, but it could be. I also get many canker sores in my mouth. So I'm so glad you're asking this because so many people have this question, and that white tongue, according to Chinese medicine, has so many answers as well. It usually is dysbiosis or stagnation. Go ahead, Jenny.
100%. It can be explained by a lot. However, we know that, oral candida, so the oral microbiome and the vaginal microbiome actually do, there's an axis there, interestingly enough. And so we want to be mindful of that. There can be breaches in the gum tissue, and this can leak things like LPS, even candida, and this can affect the vaginal microbiome. Now, would this protocol work for that? Maybe is the question. Sometimes what we might recommend is swishing. So you're taking some of those, the probiotics at least, and swishing them in the mouth before you would swallow them.
It's impossible to say how much sugar one can safely eat with mold. I like chocolate. Lou, I like chocolate too. There's just no way to be able to address that. That's almost like a drug prescription. Like, how much mold do you have? Where is the candy coming from? There's so many things. Maybe try dark chocolate. Look, I get it. Trust me, I love you for asking the question, because if this is my advice for you, if you are going to eat chocolate, make sure it's good. And not just like some rando crappy old chocolate from the, gas station. Make sure you really savor it, and then look for maybe some dark chocolate, which has some health benefits for you. When it comes to, let's see, okay, when it comes to stool and urine tests, what do they often not pinpoint accurately, really mistake or overlook? Lots of money is used out of pocket for testing. Can you give examples of each of these, please?
To say, I mean, with urine testing, testing those metabolites, sometimes we're not sure, where the candida is residing. You always want to take both into account, with symptoms and the test result. Not all tests are going to pick up the candida. The candida could be hiding. Yeah, I think that's the extent of how I would maybe answer that. I think a lot of the symptoms can really tell you a lot about the candida.
Okay. Would I need to take the vaginal balance even if I only have Candida albicans in the gut and not the vagina?
It would not hurt. We know that there's a lot of other mechanisms going on in the gut microbiome other than the translocation. It's working on the gut microbiome as well.
Do you recommend using FemFresh wipes a few times a week? I often use them after a workout to freshen up when not at home. Is that
So
a brand? I just don't know if that's a brand.
I'm not familiar with the brand, but you know what you want to make sure that they've been studied for pH. You want to make sure that there's no synthetic fragrances. Make sure that the material, I'm not sure the material that's used in Femfresh, if it's organic cotton. So you want to be mindful of those things. And yeah, again, you know, just sterilization, over sterilization is not always the best. So
Right.
again, I think keeping those things in mind.
pH is key. pH is such the key. So maybe just like some, you're at the gym, so it's going to be inconvenient, but check the pH of the product. Is Candida overgrowth related to mold in the body?
So they often can be come together. The reason why, well, there's many reasons, but mycotoxins and mold infections can cause intestinal inflammation and permeability, and it also can cause a weakened immune response. And so both of those factors together can increase vulnerability for Candida to really colonize and then go into infection and adhere and create those biofilms.
This is for my SIBO folks. Nunzia is asking, which one would you recommend for SIBO dysbiosis? I think Dr. Pimentel said we shouldn't take probiotics for SIBO. You're welcome. Right back at you, Nunzia. You know, Dr. Pimentel is the world, with Dr. Ali Rezai, world's leading experts, researchers for SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And then I work very closely with Dr. Allison Seebecker, a world-renowned SIBO specialist as well. Different sort of, they're doing the research, and Dr. Seebecker is helping with education and has just been really, really important in getting the word out about SIBO. But I think Doug, the last I talked to Dr. Pimentel, and we do have a conversation coming up with him in May that we'll share with everybody, he said, show me the studies. So he is not like, go forward and have probiotics. He is very hesitant. But there are also studies that do show that probiotics can help. And then Dr. Seebecker says, it doesn't always work. It's your personal snowflake microbiome. That's the same thing for the vagina or any other microbiome that you have. So that's why we always talk about going low and slow, especially with like the spore, any of them, but they're powerful, right? So go low and slow. I think the vaginal formulation that we're talking about here, I personally, from the work I've done with it, this is the third presentation or fourth presentation we've done for this particular product because I'm so excited about it and it's new. And so many people need help with it. There's not such an urgency to go low and slow with this because it's so easily and widely acceptably, that's not the word I'm looking for. It doesn't seem to have any pushback. When people take it, it's all like very happy. Whereas some people with Megaspore can tend to have symptoms if they go too fast. That was not an articulate answer, but I think you got the gist. Jenny, do you have any comments on that?
100% agree. You know, I think, yeah, with Megaspore, in my clinical experience with it, I've been using it for, several years, and it is generally a staple, especially with SIBO, but yeah, low and slow. And then what we've seen with the vaginal balance, it's going to differ with everybody, but you know, the majority of people's experience has been improved. In some of these studies, in fact, they did look at GI symptoms and they saw an improvement in GI symptoms.
Can you hang on for two more questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. My question, okay, I'm asking if this probiotic can help eradicate the Candida strain, Para, PSILOSIS, Para Psilocybin.
I think I know which one you're referring to. And in the original study and identification of the Astarte strains, they were studied against several different Candida strains. Candida albicans it was very strong against Candida albicans. It also showed efficacy against Crucii. And then the other one, the one that starts with a P. I would say it's not the strongest, but between that, the LA5 and the Mega Myco Balance and the Restore Flora, I think you have a collected effort against these. And the B propolis is shown against resistant strains as well.
So SIFO, small intestinal fungal overgrowth, think about it. If it's still candida that's overgrowing there, these would also help. Let's see, last one. Sorry, I wish we could have gotten to everybody, but we did get over 30 answered in less than 15 minutes. Condoms, diaphragms, IUDs, other methods of birth control. How do these affect the vaginal microbiome, and what can be done daily long term if we continue to use them, like to actively prevent challenges? You got to keep it clean, man. You have, and woman, you have got to keep those pH balanced and clean. There are all kinds of companies now that are so friendly towards pH and cleaning things. So obviously you're not cleaning your IUD, but diaphragms, condoms, et cetera. Just want to keep checking that pH, do what you can, and be very, very careful with what kind of moisturizers and lubricants that you would use there, because they're not all friendly to the vaginal microbiome. Also, there are tests that you can do to see if your partner may be having a bacterial imbalance in the male genitalia, because they may not have symptoms and they may be, for lack of a better term, this is not a good term, reinfecting, re-exposing you. And there is a MicroGen DX test for semen that you can check out. MicroGen DX, you can check it out there. Okay, Jenny, you're a genius. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. And again, apologies about any of the tech issues in the beginning. I hope it worked out.
All good. All good. Like, life's too short to get freaked out about a little graphic thing. It's no big deal. You did great. I really appreciate you, Teresa. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Becky, check out Megaspore at Microbiome Labs. All the information's right there. If you do decide to make a purchase of anything at Microbiome Labs before 7 p.m. Eastern Time tonight, March 12th, 2025, this offer of the extra goodie is just for those of you today. If you're watching the replay, thank you so much for doing that. I know it's kind of a lift to watch a replay, but I'm glad you're doing it. But the special offer does expire. That's just for today. You would get the slides from today's presentation, as well as the masterclass from my dear friend, Bree Weisselman, an incredible presentation about Candida that's a perfect complement to what we've talked about today. Okay, peace, everybody. Thank you so much. All right, take care. And we'll send out the replay tonight.